buying behavior has changed. Prospects don't click on links in emails anymore, and they don't watch the videos you spend hours creating every week. Instead, send personalized gifts and memes using VidYou. You can quickly create engaging, personalized content that immediately grabs your prospect's attention, helps you stand out in the inbox, and does it all without forcing them to click anything or go anywhere. Head over to vidyou.io/salescast to sign up for free and spend less time getting your messages across and more time selling.
In the world of sales, you either sink, swim, or break through to the next level. My name's Colin Mitchell, and this is Sales Transformation, a new kind of sales show designed to bring you through the epic, life-changing moments of elite sellers so you can experience your own sales transformation. Welcome to another episode of Sales Transformation. And of course, as always, I've got a fantastic guest for you today. I've got John Hoskins. He is the founder, 40 years of sales management consulting, former Xerox sales executive, founder of Advantage Performance, which he sold in 2016. And he's got three books. He was kind enough to mail them to me. Not one book. Not two books, but three books. They all, I'm excited to jump into them. I haven't had the chance yet, but John, thanks so much for coming on Sales Transformation. How you doing?
I'm well, Colin. Thank you for having me. Appreciate it. Looking forward to chatting.
Yeah, awesome. So I'm curious, where did it all start for you? When did you get into sales? Why? And why the heck have you stuck with it for so long?
Well, I came from a family of salespeople, and
there you go.
My father and my oldest brother were in the magazine subscription business, and I started knocking on doors in Milwaukee, Wisconsin when I was 11. So it's in the DNA. Never went to college, have always sold. Father said to me, if you learn how to sell, you'll never be out of a job. So he was right.
That's good advice.
Was good advice. Yeah.
So you started knocking on doors in the snow with no shoes or what?
Well, it was summertime and, you know, Easter break and things like that. And of course, the field organization then moved into telephone sales. So I started selling on the phone as well. And, you know, it was just a way to earn extra money as a kid. And, you know, there weren't Starbucks to work at in those days. And
you had a router
or something else. So I started phones, and then I moved to phone room. And then ended up with my own magazine franchise in Toronto, Ontario, when I was 21. I had my I ran that for about 5 years, and I sold it and went to work for Xerox in Toronto.
Wow. Okay. So I'm definitely curious on how things transpired there. So you started off in entrepreneurship fairly young, like myself, and then, you know, had a sounds like a successful exit, and then took a sales role. Walk me through kind of that experience and everything.
Well, this was a division of Xerox called Xerox Learning Systems. They were the creator of Professional Selling Skills, which probably is one of the more, you know, well-known fundamental selling skills programs. And I was at a cocktail party, and a recruiter met me, and she said, "Oh, what are you doing?" I said, "Well, I just sold my magazine franchise. I'm actually going to Jamaica for 6 weeks." And she said, "Well, look, when you get back, I want you to meet these people at Xerox." I said, "I really don't want to sell Xerox machines. It doesn't interest me." She said, "No, no, this is the publishing division, and they sell training programs to companies. They have sales training." And I said, "Oh, I'll go see the guy," right? So when I get there, the guy says, "Well, where'd you go to school?" And they only hired people from McGill and Western in Ontario. And I said, "Well, you know, don't have the MBA." And so the interview went on, and then they said, "Well, come back, we'll have another interview." And then they flew the president up from the U.S. We had another interview, and I got the job. And had a territory in southwestern Ontario, and in 10 months, they promoted me to run the western region out of Vancouver, British Columbia, where my wife and I got married, and the rest is history. I was there for about a decade.
Wow, okay, interesting. I love that. I too didn't go to college myself. I barely made it through high school. And
me too.
You know, if you by the skin of my teeth.
Yeah.
By the skin of my teeth, I was not a good student, to say the least. And I love that story that, you know, because a lot of people think you have to have the education to get the job. And, you know, there's many sales roles at many different levels that you can, you know, get that job with or without the education and you're proof of that. So I love that there. So how long was your stint there at Xerox and what happened after that?
So after Vancouver, I moved to Chicago and managed a region there. And then I managed Western U.S. As a general manager out of Chicago. And then they moved me into headquarters for the quote-unquote staff experience. I was director of U.S. sales operations. And about that time, Times Mirror bought the Learning Systems Group from Xerox. And, you know, things changed. Times Mirror was a different type of company, and they offered me a job, a VP of sales of Matthew Bender Law Book. And I went out and traveled with their reps, and I came back and said, boy, I have no interest in that type of selling. So I left and went to work as a VP of sales for a company called Omega Performance. They were a bank consulting firm based in San Francisco. It was my opportunity to get out of Connecticut and move to the West Coast, and my wife and I loved it. And moved to Tiburon and ran that organization for 5 years, had some equity. I vested and took that equity and started Advantage Performance Group in 1990.
Wow. Okay. And so back to entrepreneurship for you.
Yeah, back to working for myself.
Yeah. I'm curious. You have the experience of working for yourself and then not. Were you ready to go back to kind of working for yourself, or were you a little nervous?
Well, to the credit of my two bosses at Omega, we were all the same age. We had young kids. They were really great bosses. I credit them both. I didn't feel like I was working for someone. I really felt like I had, you know, my own lane in the sales organization, could make decisions the way I wanted to. Very few restrictions. Any ideas I had, they always supported them. So it wasn't that big of a transformation, to be honest, Colin. And then I stayed in the same world, obviously, in the sales training and management consulting world, and Advantage was a franchise organization. And we sold it in 2006. You had said 16, but it was 2006 to a Swedish-based consultancy out of Stockholm, and it was a strategic buy for them. We had distribution in the U.S. We had some products that needed to go international. And I was only 56 at the time, probably not really ready to retire, but it was a game changer for me to make the sale.
Got it. Okay. And so when did you write the books? Walk me through.
I had a summer home up in Vancouver, British Columbia, and I was kind of I had started a not-for-profit for teenage kids that taught them how to build life plans. I started another business that's still alive. It's online, called Sales Genomics, which is a sales assessment company. If you're hiring people and need to assess them, it profiles 14 different types of salespeople. And I was bored. And I said to my wife, look, bucket list thing. I want to, you know, learn to speak Spanish, learn to play the piano, write a book. And I thought, well, write a book might be easier than the other two, so let me do that. Wrote the book and put it out on Amazon, and the phone started ringing, the email lit up, and people said, hey, I love this model. How can I get my salespeople to sell like that? And that's how it happened. No intentions. Wow. Yeah.
So I'm curious. You mentioned three things on your bucket list there. Spanish, piano, and write a book. Did you learn to speak Spanish or play the piano yet?
Well, no, I own a piano now.
that's a start in the right direction.
Start, you know, my wife plays. But no, you know, with starting level 5, it was a startup again. And you know what happens is you dive in. And, you know, I love my job. It's really my hobby. It's not a job. And we are building a channel now. We have about 26 independent sales partners around the globe. and they represent the level five capabilities to their clients. And so I'm kind of back in the game again after being out of the game, but it was unintentional, truly.
Yeah. That's fantastic. So the first book, which of the three was which one?
Okay, that was Level 5 Selling. Okay. And that was the one where people said, hey, help me teach my salespeople to do that. At which point I had a blinding glimpse of the obvious, which was the world didn't need another sales training program, but there were plenty of them. In fact, one of our first clients, Colin, you'll love this, he was new in the job. He had taken over a fairly large sales organization. I said, Charles, in your diligence in the first 90 days, have you discovered any sales training that you've already done at the organization? He said, oh, yeah. He said, we've had a whole parade of sales training programs through here. And he said, I can't find any evidence of any of them sticking. And that was that. The problem with most sales training is not as bad content, but there's no reinforcement. There's no follow-up. There's no coaching. There's no practice. And 30 days later, you know, everybody goes back to normal. In fact, I had a call the other day, Colin, and the guy, same thing, new guy. He said, yep. He said, I did ask that question, and we ran the Miller Hyman Strategic Selling here about a year ago. He said, I don't know there's a blue sheet in the house. So I said, okay. proof positive that that's the wrong approach. So we really moved from an idea of event training to ongoing development and more of a SaaS model where, you know, you continue to develop as a salesperson, you never stop. You do everything in micro bites as opposed to big chunks, and you get lots of coaching and deep reinforcement and practice.
And what do you, and just kind of high level, you know, walk me through the level five selling sort of framework.
You mean the actual level five model itself?
Yeah.
Yeah. So five levels, we've labeled them all. Those labels seem to persist because people agree with them. Level one is what we call the professional visitor. Okay. This is the person who really believes that people buy from friends. Problem is nobody could have that many friends. They generally do not have call objectives when they go into the account. They're kind of well-paid tourists. You know, they drive around with an expense report, drop in, see people, have a cup of coffee, but, you know, they don't get an order unless one's given to them. And they usually have only one contact in the account. So if that contact turns over, the account turns over. And clients tell us that, unfortunately, there's still somewhere around 10% of all calls are professional visits. They're worthless. You know, we call it scrap and waste. The second level we call the price peddler. And tell me if I'm going into too much detail here for you, but I think it's a gem.
No, I love this. Yeah. And so what percentage of salespeople typically fall in that level one, you know, hey, people buy from people they like, and, you know, you're never going to have enough people that like you to, you know, hit the goals that you need to.
Well, I'd say on average, you know, 5 to 15%, but I'll tell you a quick story. I'm in Dallas in a executive conference room. And we're going through the model, and chief operating officers there. And I said, Don, what percent of your calls do you think are made at the professional visitor level? He paused. He says, 60%. I said, 60%. It was the highest number I'd ever heard. And I said, wow, that's a big number. He said, hey, we built our business on building strong relationships with people. And that's a lot of our business is repeat business. So we have to be careful here. I said, I got it. So the next level is price peddler. And that's the person whose product is a price list. You know, mine is just as good. I can get it for you cheaper. What are you currently paying for your, you know, paper clips, whatever it might be? So Don, what percent of your people are calling at the price peddler level? Or what percent of the calls? Another 60%. I said, I'm covered 120%. Like, where are we going from here? He said, no. He said, I get it. We need to get out of here because, you know, our margins suck. And we need to improve them. And I can't do it with people that are professional visitors and price peddlers. So the next level up is level three. We call it the technical teller. And this is the most predominant one, Colin. You can guess. It's the spray and pray. You know, show up and throw up, a data dump, you know, all one way. Actually, you know, Rackham proved that the person that does that actually creates more objections. But 50% or more of all sales calls are a technical tell.
Yeah,
and these are really in high tech, you know,
and these are the people that are saying, "Hey, sales is just a numbers game." You know, if you make 100 calls and you're going to get this many and you're going to get this many deals and you're going to get this many, they're going to close. And it's just throw everything out there and see what sticks.
See what sticks. Exactly. They think their job is customer education. And some of them actually enjoy, you know, how much knowledge they have. If they're an engineer or something, they, you know, they want to talk bits and bytes, and has nothing to do with what the product will do for the business, but that's the way it works. So the 3-2-1, that those levels, that represents our claim to 60% of all calls are scrap and waste. So if a company's spending $10 million a year on sales and marketing, $6 million is probably scrap and waste. It's not producing anything. No other functional area in the company would tolerate that kind of performance, but sales does.
Wow. Wow. Okay.
So let me take you to level four. Level four is kind of the first, you know, level of professional selling. We call it the product service consultant. And this is a person who does ask questions, does undercover needs, knows how to handle objections, asks for commitment, does their homework, has a call objective, not just a primary call objective, but a secondary. And the only difference is everything they talk about in terms of their product is only related to the outcomes that the innate features of that product will solve. So right. It doesn't move to that next level, which we call level five, the value creator, where that person's now connecting the solution that they're offering to a business issue or an initiative that that company is trying to undertake and achieve. And that really requires business acumen to get to that role of, you know, ROI. Let me show you how this product can put money in your pocket and not take money out of your pocket, which most of the other levels are thinking about.
Wow. Okay. And so, so this is the type of work that you're working with organizations to get as many people as possible to that level five.
That is exactly correct. Yep. And we do that. You know, we have very strict metrics. We make coaching due Friday at 5 o'clock. Every quarter, every manager creates an individual development plan for one of their reps, each of their reps. So the areas of strength, areas of development, and you know, it's a very rigorous coaching process. It's not just a sales training process.
Wow. Okay. And is there certain characteristics of just people individually that make it more difficult to even be capable of getting to that level five, you know, selling status?
I would say yes. You know, it's hard to make a silk purse out of a sow's ear. And it's, we have defined 40 different characteristics and traits of these various levels. And we work with clients to define them. And the real goal in our initial work is to say, you have to have a common language and understanding of what good looks like. And you can't coach unless there's agreement about that. And so what happens almost immediately in our accounts is people start using the language of level five. Even a rep, you know, most of the time they're reps out there by themselves, but they can walk out of a call and they can think in their mind, I wonder where I was at in that call. Oh gosh, I was at level three, wasn't I? Well, what did I do? Oh, you know what? I never asked any questions. All I did was talk. You know, they can begin to self-coach against the model.
So once they just have that sort of level of awareness, they can sort of be, you know, slowly making progress of getting to that level. Even though they might not fully be capable of understanding. I mean, I would even imagine that even the best sellers aren't their best all the time, right? So they're going to maybe kind of fall back to maybe what's comfortable, which might be a level two, level three, or what they're used to before they really feel in the zone and comfortable in that level five way of selling.
It is a dynamic model. You can observe it in a call in that people can move up and down the ladder. You know, someone could open a call, but, you know, hey, did you see the U.S. Open yesterday? You see that little girl from Canada beat that, you know, that's start of relationship building, right? A little, you know, friendliness, chit chat. But then do they move out of there? And do they, you know, move up to a higher level as they start the call? The other thing, Colin, that's interesting is clients or customers will drive you into different levels. So all the customer has to do is just say, well, look, what does this cost? You're going to move right down to level two.
You're back to level two.
Right. And you need to think about how to navigate yourself out of that. And those are the skill sets. So I mentioned practice earlier. We work with a platform that's a virtual role practice platform called Rehearsal. I'm sure you're familiar with the space. And we have 49 microlearning e-modules on every topic under the sun about selling and selling skills. And so the leader can go travel or observe a call. Let's say that you watched me and you said, John, you know, you really fumbled that objection last time. We should work on objection handling. Why don't you go watch the objection handling module? I'd like you to record yourself making a response to that objection again. Send it to me, and I'll review it and critique it and send you back a video and give you my feedback. And then there's three things the manager can do. They can say, John, you missed a step. Try it again. There's one part here that I didn't see you do. I'd love to see you do it better. Or, hey, good job, John. You know, check the box. We got that one nailed. Let's make sure we use the model going forward. Or three is, hey, let's capture this as a best practice and move it to the leaderboard so all your colleagues and peers can benefit from seeing how you handle that objection.
Yeah, I love that. I love that. And I'm sure once there's sort of this level of awareness of these different levels of selling, you can start to be a little bit more conscious of like, oh, you know, you start to know as a seller where you could have, you know, done better or where you kind of fell back and what you need to work on, right?
Well, and it because a great coach asks questions versus tells people what to do, it allows you to have that dialogue with the person because you have a common understanding of what good looks like. So when coming out of a call, the first thing you could say is, hey, Colin, where do you think you were at in that call on level 5? It kind of felt like it was level 4. Well, tell me more. Why do you think you were at level 4? Well, I really didn't get into any business issues, did I? I didn't really talk about some of their initiatives and some of the things they're trying to accomplish. Yeah, anything else? Well, I know I have some insights about that industry. I know a lot about it. I probably could have, you know, gone there and talked a little bit about that. So it changes the way the dialogue around coaching happens.
Yeah. Yeah. Awesome. I love this. Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. John, this has been fantastic. Thanks so much for coming on today. And, you know, we kind of got into level 5 selling, but you've also got level 5 coaching system, level 5 sales leader. Where can people find all the books? Where can they find out more about what you're doing? And how can they just simply get into your world?
So the books are all on Amazon under Level 5 Selling. If you just plug that in, you'll get all three of them as a trilogy. In terms of getting to us, we're www.level5selling.com. And my email is john@level5selling.com. And you can text me or call me at 480-235-5582.
Fantastic. We will include all of those details in the show notes for you. If you enjoyed today's episode with John, please write us a review, share the show with your friends. It really does help out. And as always, we are listening for your feedback. Hey, you stuck around. That tells me you're serious about your own sales transformation. If you're tired of doing things the old way and want to get started in your journey with other people on the same path, head over to salescast.community and crush your numbers on your leaderboard. Yeah, it's free. Salescast.community. Send me a DM with your best pitch and mention this ad, and I might even give you free access to our best templates.